Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this cave are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Okay, from Los Angeles, this is AnCast, our special end of the decade holiday edition, I guess. We're doing two shows here. We're going to cover the first half of this decade in this first part, and then the second half in the next show. Hopefully this goes smoothly. We don't have a guest. It's just Justin and I. We're just going to reminisce about the last 10 years or so. Because, I mean, you would agree, the last 10 years pretty much comprise the main history of anime in this country.
I mean, when you think about it, the year 2000, we had just started getting regular DVD releases. People were just starting to make the switch from VHS. A few of the early adopters had their DVDs. I mean, that was the year Cowboy Bebop came out. Yeah. Just to give you a point of reference. This is ancient history.
Yeah, it feels like it was 20, 30 years ago. But that was the year that, Bandai just started putting Cowboy Bebop out on DVD. And it was I remember that being a huge deal. DVDs are a big deal.
I remember walking in front of the Virgin Megastore in Times Square and seeing a big Cowboy Bebop standee in the window and going, holy shit, we have arrived.
I remember buying the first 4-episode DVD of Trigun with that metallic cover.
Right.
I paid, I think, $33 for it at a Suncoast.
Jesus, you were paying SRP?
It was the Suncoast, the only place you could get it in Tucson, Arizona.
At that point, I was already mail ordering everything. I remember Reel.com.
Yes, I do.
So I started out with Reel.com because they started offering 40% off everything pre-ordered.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where I was blowing $300-$400 a month just on anime DVDs.
Well, do you remember in those early days online, they got it during this was during the online bubble too, and all the online retailers were doing really stupid shit like $10 off a $10 purchase. where you could or they would have some deal on DVDs where you could get like 3 or 4 of them shipped to you for like -$4 or something like that, like 800.com and buy.com.
Oh yeah, I was ordering a lot of DVDs from express.com, which not only had the 40% off, which is almost their entire margin, free shipping, and they would give you a little pad of Post-its with every order, which I still have.
Yep, I remember that express.com Post-its. I think I still have some.
Mm-hmm. There were pens too, but those died pretty quick.
Man, this feels like it was forever ago.
It was forever ago. I was in a college dorm.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I was living in Hopi Lodge in the University of Arizona. If anybody out there goes to that school, shout out to Hopi Lodge. We had the space heaters. Man, that was forever ago. Both of us were still doing VHS fan sub trading, I think.
I was coming up on the tail end of it.
It was the end of it, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember, I think that was the year I got such wonderful fan sub classics. This is why I just kind of checked out of the fan sub scene. Such classics as Mamote Shugogeten.
Oh, God.
What a terrible show that was.
Oh, that was garbage. Didn't that eventually get licensed?
No. The manga was brought up by Raijin Comics, but no one noticed.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, and this was right around the time digital fan subs were starting to take hold. I remember watching those really shitty Love Hina digisubs.
Yeah, those were bad. those looked terrible.
Yeah, well, and the English was really broken, and those were just terrible.
Right, and I remember just so few computers had the CPU power to keep up with the decoding that you were almost waiting for every video to stutter.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I had a pretty good computer in college, so I didn't really have that problem. But I remember you couldn't really blow them up because the resolution was so low.
Well, the being in the dorm, that dorm did not have broadband.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I wasn't downloading shit. I was just...
We had unfettered broadband back in the day.
Right. So CPM, this was the year I started at CPM as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the end of 2000, it was the end of summer. I was, I had just quit that horrible, horrible job with sci-fi.com.
Yep, I was part of that too.
Yeah.
Anime there was, Colony. This
short-lived Anime Colony site. Sci-Fi Channel had long since stopped playing any anime, But there's this one guy there who shall remain nameless because I hate him and I want him to die.
His name is Kang Tung.
Yeah. Yeah, that's him. Damn it, Zach, you ruin everything.
Well, I don't even know where that guy is now. Who cares?
Nobody does. So anyway, he wanted to start this anime colony space on sci-fi.com. And this being the dot-com bubble, basically the sci-fi people saw their website as a potential big business. Mm-hmm. So he found a sponsor, which was Psychonet, aka Anime Depot. And if you don't know the whole story, Psychonet was started by a guy who was crazy and a pathological liar. So even though he was just like a drop shipper and he had a warehouse, he was somehow on the stock market. Like, he was actually being publicly traded. But it was all smoke and mirrors. He had offered to buy out Anime News Network several times by that point. I always turned him down because I knew he was full of it. And then he sent out press releases that he did, in fact, buy us out. Long story short, he never paid. He agreed to pay like $900,000 to be the sponsor for this site. Never paid a dime. And the site got shut down. I quit long before that because the guy running it was a loser. And I was working at a service bureau just to pay the bills, and then I meet John O'Donnell on a plane, and he hires me on the spot.
John O'Donnell.
John O'Donnell.
He's a character.
Indeed.
No, I don't know. I was firmly ensconced in university life at that point, but that was on the second year I went to Anime Expo, which that year was held at the Disneyland Hotel.
Oh, God.
Which, that was an interesting experience.
Oh, God, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, that was the year that J-List got thrown out of the dealer's room for selling some Pokemon Hentai Doujinshi to some kid.
Oh, that was J-List. I didn't know who that was.
That was J-List, yeah. And they were banned from AX dealer's rooms for, God, at least half a decade or so, I think. But that was the year. I remember we were standing in line waiting to get in to see the Utena movie, the premiere of the 35mm print, the Utena movie. And ooh, somebody came by and was like, hey, have you guys heard? I was there with Cookie, George Phillips. We were standing in line together for that, and somebody came up and told us about J-List getting booted out. But that was a very memorable year, because that year, not only the Utena movie debuted, but the Escaflowne movie was the big premiere. It was showing there, I think, for the first time anywhere. And notably, that was also the year that somebody working the booth, the projection booth, ripped it and put it online. Do you remember that?
I wasn't at that AX. That was the last AX that I did not go to.
No. But do you remember the file? Because that got released digitally. That got bootlegged and put online right after Anime Expo.
No. I actually never knew that.
It was like a telescene. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Someone ripped the 35mm print and it wound up online. It was a really shitty copy of it. But yeah, that showed up online. But yeah, that was a very memorable Anime Expo. And the reason I mentioned Kane from Anime Colony is because I wouldn't have been able to afford to go to that convention if I hadn't hounded them to pay me for my freelance work for Anime Colony.
I remember you were the biggest pain in the ass.
Yeah. Well, hey, gotta get paid, you know?
I'm not faulting you for it. I'm just saying you were a gigantic pain in the ass.
Yeah, you have to be mercenary about it. They hadn't paid me in like 6 months. Not a dime.
Had it been that long?
It had been that long. 6 months. They hadn't paid me a dime.
I remember something was definitely wrong there because I left, I think, when it was at the four-month mark. And I think I sent an email to all the writers. I was the editor working under Kane. And I'm pretty sure I sent an email to all the writers like, look, I'm quitting in disgust. Just so you know, sorry, I'm sorry it hasn't worked out better for you. It certainly hasn't worked out well for me.
Well, yeah, and you got to remember, as much as a pain in the ass as I was speaking for everybody else. Like, I took up the cause because nobody else wanted to be confrontational about it.
And yeah, so, I remember you were, I remember reading your emails and picturing you. I hadn't met you at this point, but I remember picturing you wearing a cape.
Hey, you know what? Someone's got to stand up because those companies will take advantage of writers. Like, I would have never gotten paid if I hadn't have fucking demanded it. And that's the mercenary freelance life. That taught me, like, don't ever take shit from people. Don't ever let them not pay you. Don't let them get away with delaying it for half a year. You can't let them do it. Otherwise, you will not get paid. I mean, Mike Toole talked about that before. Like, you have to be that way because people are dicks and they'll deny you money. Kane fucking taught me an important lesson by being a huge asshole about not paying his writers.
Well, he was outright psychotic with May.
He was.
I've told you the story. He would basically just kind of keep me around to feel better about himself by keeping me away from everything. Anyway, so I started at Central Park Media, and initially I went in there and everyone was just like rolling their eyes like, oh God, what did John drag in this time? What annoying fanboy. But they brought me on and I was actually their first video and in-house video editor because Final Cut Pro had just come out. Mm. And up until this point, this is actually a pretty major change in the way anime was produced in this country, because up until this point, everything had to be done out of house. Like, if you were a Pioneer or if you were Media Blasters, you could not do any video editing or any assembly or any real work in your office. You had to hire out at this huge post-production firm to do all this tape-to-tape copying and, you know, spend time supervising this giant, expensive $3 million editing salon. This was the first time you could actually have a master in your office and actually manipulate it and do some editing. And it started off with just really simple stuff like trailers and DVD extras. And eventually, this is the same technology is what led places like ADV and even now Funimation to basically bring all their DVD and now Blu-ray authoring in-house. It was part of a very big sea change in professional video production.
Hmm. Oh, the other thing, one thing I did want to mention was that was the year Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust came out. And I remember driving, me and my friends, we all piled into one of our cars and we had to drive to Phoenix, Arizona, which is like, it's like two hours away from Tucson. To see the movie because it was the only theater within the state that was playing the film.
Right.
And the print was, I remember it being the most fucked up, like clearly this print had been to like a dozen film festivals and then like someone wiped their ass with it. I mean, it looked like shit, but hey, we were super stoked to see it in 35mm. I love the last third of that movie.
I still enjoy that movie and I keep remembering like, oh, I wish the dub was better. The backstory of that is that dub was never meant to be permanent.
Hmm.
They were intending to show to use that dub to show it to Hollywood executives who would inevitably write them a big check and they would redub it with big Hollywood celebrities. Well, that never happened.
That never happened.
In fact, I'm pretty sure Urban Vision blew way too much money co-funding that movie, and it all blew up in their face.
Yeah, they didn't survive much longer than that. They were still around in, like, 2005, but...
Oh, they're still around now.
What are they doing?
Nothing.
Nothing. Sitting around, keeping the office open.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a couple discs in print that they have, and they I believe they branched off into Hispanic movies at one point.
Really?
Yeah. Then they had that Swingin' Sammy Sosa release. One other thing that really that bears mentioning this year is that was the year we actually lost a really big Japanese voice actress, Shiho Niyama, who she was in Sailor Moon, and she was also Deedlit from Record of Lotus War.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the year she died, and she was young. She was like 29, but she was in everything. For many, many years, and everyone got really, really sad about that.
Wow.
That was like the first, from my years in the fandom, I think that was the first time that anyone passed away that people all, like, noticed.
You know, it's been a rash of that, like, voice actresses dying really young.
Yeah, I would
wager it's stress.
I would wager it's probably the depression from having to voice hentai in their spare time.
Yeah. The shame, it kills.
Yeah.
Okay, so the DVD releases of 2000. And just so people know, we're going year by year. We're gonna talk about the history and then get into just the DVDs that came out that year, whatever releases, theatrical, that kind of a thing. So going down the list of 2000 releases, and we can thank Chris Beveridge over at Animated DVD for providing us with this excellent list. This is an interesting list. The first thing that sticks out to me is... it's just a memory I have. Pokemon Volume 13, Wake Up Snorlax.
That sticks out.
That sticks out because that in that year, some friends of mine and I decided to make Pokemon Valentines, and they were all really terrible. But the my favorite was, do you take it up the Snorlax?
Oh, that is so funny in an I am 13 sort of way.
It is indeed. I was 19. What do you want?
Yeah. Oh, Nazca.
Nazca. Remember, okay, now Nazca is most known for having a little
And really
tiny,
only known at this point.
A little tiny clip of it was in the opening credits to Malcolm in the Middle.
Right.
That's what it's known for.
Other than and it's that, a it terrible pretty, show. Yeah, it like it, a bunch of critics at the time went nuts over it. So I bought, I think, the first volume, and I was like, people are getting worked up over this? This is garbage.
Yeah, I think I bought the first volume on VHS. It was disappointing. Also this year, Castle Cagliostro. Wow. Was that the first? That must have been the first DVD release.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. We lots of VHS rehashes. Other thing I'm noticing is a lot of these discs have problems.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Like I guess, you know, DVD was only like 2 years old at that point, 3 years old. And, yeah, God, a number of these discs either had to be reauthored or recalled at one point, or they just kind of look like ass by today's standards.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, if you're popping in a 10-year-old DVD, it's going to look like shit. This is that manga video release. Perfect Blue came out. That was
a
manga video release that I remember not looking great.
No, it didn't. Although Perfect Blue still doesn't look great even on Blu-ray.
No, it's got the that has a real bad outline problem, doesn't it?
It's almost like the cells were popping up off the page when they were photographing it. So like a bunch of scenes have these weird shadow effects that I look completely by accident.
I haven't seen that in forever. What else came out this year? Please Save My Earth.
You Step Off.
Your favorite.
Haunted Junction, the first, I think that's the first subtitle only DVD release because no one bought it.
Were the VHS sub only? They must have been.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the last of the big clamshell Anime Village releases.
Anime Village. I had that Escaphone box, that big bulky ass one.
Oh, tons of people had that. I treasured mine.
Man, Rona Kenshin Volume 1. Holy shit.
The Pat Lamer movies. Sword for Truth.
That was a big seller.
Yeah, because everyone thought it'd be like Ninja Scroll, and boy, was it not.
Here we go. The auspicious ADV release of Sin, the motion picture, based on the hit video game.
Was this the time around the era that ADV was referring to themselves as the Microsoft of anime?
I think so. This was around the time...
Given how janky Windows 98 was, I think that was kind of accurate. Let's see. Oh, Record of Lotus War TV, something that a lot of people loved and I never understood.
Oh, it was garbage. Like, the animation was really bad, but it had a spectacular opening theme. Like,
Everyone peed their pants over that opening, and I just remember when I was going to the orientation, because I just started School of Visual Arts the fall before, and at the orientation, Metro Anime, which at the time was one of the oldest anime clubs in existence, which was affiliated with that school, at the orientation, this horribly nebbishy looking guy from the anime club showed that opening, and I looked around, and everyone just had this look on their face, like, what the fuck is this, and why are we watching it? And he thought this was just so amazing. Everyone would just come running towards his showings, and I was just like, "This is garbage."
Had a great opening theme though.
Love the opening theme. I think I still have the CD single, little 3-inch CD.
Oh, I remember those. And
I missed those.
End of the year, Princess Mononoke on DVD.
I remember everyone was peeing their pants because it wasn't for certain if that would be subtitled on the disc or not.
Yeah, I remember that. That was another movie I had to drive to Phoenix to see, but that was 99, I think.
Yeah. Oh, look, the reissue of Macross Plus Volume 1 on DVD because they messed up the 5.1 encoding, and so half the speakers were just dead quiet the whole show.
Young technology.
Yep.
Okay, and finally, we're going to do this for every year, just to toss it out there, mix it up a little bit. The Best Picture winner for year 2000 was Gladiator, a guilty pleasure of mine, a movie I continue to love and own on Blu-ray, but I will acknowledge it is a very silly movie.
I was never able to take that movie seriously, and I was aghast when that won Best Picture.
Well, it wasn't up against much of anything that was particularly strong. Traffic, Aaron Brockovich, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. There you go.
I loved Traffic when I first saw it, and then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wow, that movie was garbage.
Try rewatching it now. It's difficult. Okay. All right, so 2001. What happened in this year?
Oh, well, we started off the year of CPM acquiring said Utena movie, and everyone cheered before they found out that it involved Utena turning into a car.
Which I continue to love.
Oh, this is when Anime News Network was still reporting on online petitions. Here's one for having the Street Fighter II movie be released with Japanese audio. Well, that went somewhere.
Actually, we should mention, this was the first full year, I believe, Chris McDonald was in charge of the site.
Yeah, that's true. 2000 was the year that I relinquished control to Isaac Alexander, and he...
Didn't work out.
Though he had the best of intentions, wasn't really able to keep up with it, and then he ended up ceding it to Chris and Cookie.
For those curious, if you remember George, he's doing pretty good. He's gainfully employed, seems to be living a good life. It's not a good way to keep up with him, but he is doing well. So he's happy to hear that.
CPM was also at this point also in control of the AOL anime channel, or anime, I don't remember what they called it, but they would have these big things that we would make a big thing out of where a voice actor would come to our office, and if they weren't fast typers, I would sit there and type for them. And we would all order cheap sushi bento boxes and just hang out until like 8 p.m. or whatever, and people would get to come online and chat with their favorite voice actors.
This was also the time Answer Man launched January 1st or 2nd, 2001. And I had just started out doing that, and I was doing it 3 times a week.
You know, I was looking through some of those last night, and I was really kind of impressed how earnest you were about answering everyone's questions.
I was a true believer, you know.
Well, the other thing that struck me was how many of those questions no one would bother asking today because of either our encyclopedia or Wikipedia.
Oh yeah. Well, hey, that was a long time. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but this isn't something, you know, people really think about a lot because today we take those for granted. Back in 99-2000, when ANN started, there was nowhere to go when you wanted that sort of information. You had to ask around, and half the time people would pull shit out of their ass, just like they do today.
Oh, man. I'm looking at some of them right now, and here's an article from March 2001. The question... Oh, my gosh. The question is, how does one go about becoming an anime writer? I have a bunch of great ideas for anime series, and I'm a good writer, but I don't know where to start my career. And I answered the question by saying, I get this a lot, and I really hate to sound so negative, but it is but it is nearly impossible to become a writer in the Japanese animation industry if you're American. Over the years, this has slowly become, fuck you!
This was also the year that Ikuhara, the director of Utena and Sailor Moon, moved to L.A.
Oh, yeah, and he would show up at every Anime Expo and people stopped giving a shit like 4 years later.
Not just Anime Expo. He showed up to almost every anime convention, no matter how tiny.
Yeah, I think he got a taste of celebrity.
Yeah, and the guy was always a little creepy.
He was always a little creepy, and he made
he
me
was
just
always
him...
wearing the same leather pants or alligator pants.
Yeah, he just made himself too available.
And at CPM, we used to, because he was always underfoot because we were the licensee for Utena, we used to refer to him as Icky.
Oh, man. Oh, this year, holy shit, Kimigori Orange Rose, Summer's Beginning. I want to mention this because I was fucking loved that movie when I saw it at my anime club. Like, we all loved it. We thought it was great. And I recently revisited it because I found it in a box in my closet. It's awful. It is not good.
I remember wanting to like it really bad and never really getting around to liking it.
Yeah. It was just one of that. That was definitely during the time when we were just wide-eyed at anything anime. And that you know, it was just a soap opera. But seeing it felt fresh. And we just sort of fell in love with it and the musical numbers and stuff like that. And watching it now, difficult to watch.
there was a lot of stuff going on this year as involving conventions. I remember this year being a really big convention year. This was the year, first and foremost, this is the year YowieCon got started.
Oh, really? Hmm.
Which, you know, started off with probably a few hundred people in some San Francisco hotel, and did that snowball.
Yeah, it's still going strong today.
And meanwhile, this was also the year, something I was much more involved with, Big Apple Anime Fest got started.
Yep. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay, well, oh God. I still have nightmares about this. This Big Apple Anime Fest was basically the brainchild of John O'Donnell, the CEO of Central Park Media. He really had these huge dreams of starting the Cannes Film Festival for anime. And so he took me and hired a few other kids. It was basically five people crammed into the stuffy, completely unventilated, no windows, old conference room that no one used anymore in the CPM office.
Okay.
And we were looking around for venue space. We ended up settling on a hotel that we could afford that, as one of our staff put it, smells like an old lady's basement. We took out the whole floor. John somehow managed to finagle sponsorship money out of Sony and Mitsubishi and a handful of other companies. And we worked so hard to make this show a huge success. And the thing was, because it was John O'Donnell and he was a very strong personality, and this is when I first really learned how childish this business was, because this was not a big business still. This was five companies. Everyone knew each other, even at that point, and everyone hated each other. So because this was what, you know, was referred to snarkily behind his back as JOD EgoCon, nobody would help. Viz wouldn't do anything for us. They were completely uninterested. Bandai would send us some DVDs, but that was it. Pioneer wanted nothing to do with it. Now, also, this was because John was a giant perv, and he insisted on having Midnight Anime Concourse, which was hentai night, basically, but all night. This was the first time Night Shift Nurses had been shown uncut. And at any rate, it was a lot of work. No other anime companies would cooperate, as they would refuse to cooperate for the rest of the anime bubble.
Yeah.
And I burned myself out, and it was just this unmitigated nightmare that I resolved from that point on. I never wanted to have anything to do with running an anime con ever again.
Yeah. Well, lesson learned. Interesting little bit of trivia here. According to this, at Anime Expo 2001, a art board drawn by Hidenori Matsubara of Bell Dandy from the Oh My Goddess movie went for $10,000 at the auction.
Jesus.
Can you imagine anything going for $10,000 at an auction these days? I can't. I mean, I was in the room when, I think this was the year before, it might have been the year before, they had, what's her face? The Pat Labor artist, Kimigari Orange Road.
Akemi Takata.
Akemi Takata was there, and she had an art board of Madoka from Kimigari Orange Road. And it went for like $13,000 or something like that. And, you know, stuff used to actually fetch prices like that back in the day. But, man, these days, I can't imagine anything going for $1,000. But I haven't been to an auction in forever, so I don't know what they're really going for now.
Right. Just to bring it back to Big Apple Anime Fest. Big Apple Anime Fest was supposed to take place Labor Day weekend 2001. Guess what happened about a month before that in New York?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Katsuhiro Otomo was supposed to come. Rintaro was supposed to come. And Otomo chickened out. He's just like, I don't know. That place is you know, that place is fucked up. I'm a little scared. I'm not going to New York. You crazy? And I just remember John O'Donnell going, what a pussy.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, we were living there, and we knew it was fine, kind of. We had an autograph signing at JNR Music World, which was right by Ground Zero, and it was still so bad down there that my eyes were watering outside. Like, you couldn't stand outside there. It still stunk that bad.
I don't think it's, I mean, really? Like, you're like, yeah, he sure was a pussy. Like, Really?
I didn't agree. I wouldn't have come to New York.
Okay, because it sounded like you were sort of agreeing there for a minute.
Well, my old college dorm, I kind of... Look, my old college dorm, like, emptied out by about half. So, you know, nobody wanted to be in New York. So, but it kind of gave Big Apple Anime Fest an opportunity. We were just like, hey, now this is about rebuilding New York. This is about, you know, oh, the people of New York are suffering. We need to, you know, have a diversion. And honestly, I think people supported that. People really got behind that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the time. I mean, it was easy to throw yourself into something at that point because, yeah,
we had the premiere of Metropolis.
Oh, boy.
Metropolis, the climax of the movie, is a building falling. A giant skyscraper.
I remember there was a huge controversy right around this time because Read or Die came out. And if you remember, there's a scene in the first episode where she leaps off the World Trade Center, turning all of her papers into a big airplane or whatever.
Oh, shit.
Do you remember that? I guess, I don't know.
I never actually saw Read or Die. I saw, like, one episode, and I was just like, eh.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Interesting to note, the anime news for Wednesday, September 12th, 2001, involves ADV canceling a bunch of subtitled VHS releases.
Please tell me they blamed it on 9/11. Please tell me they blamed it on 9/11.
No, it's just a press release that had a list. Wasn't anything like that. But, Urban Vision announces Tekkaman Blade 2 DVD collection on September 12th, 2001.
Oh, wow. I'm just looking through our website from then. That was also when we were meticulously compiling the edit list, or at least, what was his name? Kyle Pope was.
Yep.
Kyle Pope.
For the longest time, that was the highest, that was the most trafficked column on the site for a very long time. People loved that.
God, anime fans are so OCD. It's really amazing.
Well, I mean, it served its purpose. You know, people who their only access to anime was on TV, and they wanted to know what they were missing. And I cannot imagine that the pedantic personality it would take to sit there and compare, something you taped off TV to your fan sub or whatever. But he did it, and people loved him for it. So not going to fault the guy. Okay, should we go ahead and get into the releases?
Yeah. Oh, one other thing that happened this year. This was the year that Akira got re-released in theaters.
Oh yeah, that was Genion's big push, right?
Yeah, and everyone got so butthurt that they redubbed it. And frankly, you know, that old dub, I know a lot of people love it. It is incomprehensible.
It is. Well, that old dub was the first thing I saw, and I love it too. But the new one, it's just they reworked the dialogue so that the movie made sense. Like I could put two and two together in the plot of the film thanks to the new dub and even the new subtitle track. The new translation just made more sense.
I understand you might not like Johnny Young Bosch as Kaneda, but come on, it makes sense now.
It does make sense now. Okay,
this is also the year people got really butthurt because ADV was bringing out the Rurouni Kenshin OVAs as Samurai X.
Ah, yes.
Like pissed.
Samurai X. Such a stupid name.
it is.
He's a samurai. He's got an X-shaped scar on his cheek. Get it? Okay, so DVDs for 2001. Ooh, Biohunter.
Oh, God. Virgin Fleet.
Virgin Fleet. What was that about?
That was about it was the World War II show with, like, girls who you know, had special powers as long as they were virgins. It was by the guy that created Sakura Wars. Oh, this is when Escaflowne came out on DVD and also television.
Yeah, that dub was fucking terrible.
I never managed to sit through the dub.
I taped the premiere on Fox Kids.
Oh, the Fox Kids dub. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. It was just nonstop. It was like they were worried about taking a dramatic breath because they were worried that kids would be too ADD to stay with it.
Irresponsible Captain Tyler came out. Yet another of the first, one of the first anime I ever saw.
Oh yeah, and I remember Sean had this thing because there were fan subs of this floating around on VHS for years up till this point.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that was really kind of progressive that Sean did, and this might have been for the initial VHS release, maybe not for the DVD, was he had a fan sub amnesty program where you could mail in your old VHS fan sub and get like $10 off.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And, you know, that was VHS tape. There was actually, you know, a cost in making multiple copies to, you know, today, of course, you could just burn another DVD-R. I'll send this in. Get another $10 off.
Yep. Okay. Oh, Big O came out this year. I love that show.
Pet Shop of Horrors came out.
How is that more noteworthy than Big O?
I like it better.
Pet Shop of Horrors? Really?
I always enjoyed that show. It was in a snarky sort of way. Here's the OVA box for Fushigi Yugi, because the OVA was unwatchable, really.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I remember being really let down by that. And, I mean, I was let down by the last half of the TV series for Fushigi Yugi. And then I watched the OVAs, and wasn't that the one where, like, Tamahome goes to the real world or whatever?
And then has to go back, even though he has been reincarnated and he doesn't have any memories as Tamahome.
Oh, God, of course. Ooh, Jungle Day Eco.
Oh, can I just veer off into hentai for a little bit?
Yeah.
This is the year that we came, at CPM, we released the hentai Pure Love. I think the Japanese title was Rhythm or something like that. And I remember this because it was the single shittiest looking hentai I'd ever seen. It was all digital, but it looked like it was made entirely in Windows Paint. So, like, everything was this terrible gradient. Trees and backgrounds were, like, obvious fractals.
Yeah.
And my favorite part was there was a scene that took place in the park, and the park inexplicably had a checkerboard floor. So this show looked so bad and had this ridiculously, hilariously off-key ending theme. When I was hiring other video editors at CPM, I decided, I'm going to give you an alchemy test. You have 45 minutes. Here's a tape of Pure Love. Slap together a trailer. And most people just kind of stared at the screen for 45 minutes and decided that they didn't really want this job.
Oh, wow. The Oh My Goddess movie came out on DVD, and it premiered, I remember, it premiered at Anime Expo that year, and it had leaked to the internet. This was one of the first years where the Oh My Goddess movie had leaked to the internet before Anime Expo, and so any, like, excitement over the premiere was just, the air was just taken right out of it. I remember that, and that was the first year I had noticed, like, well, this isn't exciting, everyone's already seen this movie. That was an interesting year.
Mm. Oh, this is also the year that Evangelion finally came out on DVD.
You know that, I was looking at 2001 and it listed a bunch of them as having coming, or 2000. A few of them had come out then.
Well, this must have spilled over from one to the next.
Well, notably, the final release of 2001 was Evangelion Collection Volume 1 Remastered. So they're already re-releasing Evangelion.
Oh yeah, that was because they tried to fix all of the all of, like, jumping screen, and they also, like, photoshopped the hell out of Evangelion, so that first DVD had a ton of, like, really bad, obviously digital video replacement going on. That was the era of quick, we have to make this look not Japanese.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know what? And this was the, I remember this. This was the only one they re-released, the volume one. Because that's the only one they really fucked up really badly, right?
Right, yeah. And basically, people release is like, what the fuck did you do? Because it did not look right at all. Like, every time they did something, there was suddenly no film grain. The rest of the show was grainy as hell.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was bad.
Okay. So the Best Picture winner for 2001 was A Beautiful Mind, which I hated. Hated that movie.
I was never interested in seeing it.
And that's Ron Howard. What do you want? I was pissed because not only were there two obvious better movies, the first Lord of the Rings, which is still the best one of those films, the theatrical cut of the first Lord of the Rings movie is the best one of those movies, and Moulin Rouge came out that year, which was still one of my all-time favorite films.
Yeah, there are a couple of my favorites that came out this year, and none of them got anywhere close to nominated.
Okay. Okay, so, moving on, 2002. Boy, we're just pushing the gas on this thing. okay.
These are going to be two installments of 2 hours.
No, they're not. I'll be hacking the shit out of it. Okay, so 2002. What happened in 2000? I was about a year away from graduating college, and this was the first year I experienced burnout. I believe this was the first year also that I had handed the column over to my ex-girlfriend, and she's still a good buddy of mine, Rebecca Bundy. She took over as Miss Answer Man. I was just sick of writing that column. Who'd have thought I'd burn out after doing it 3 times a week for a year and a half?
Yeah, really.
But Yeah, but what was significant about that year for you?
Well, this was actually this was the year because I was still heavily involved in Big Apple Anime Fest. This was the year that Tomino came, and he was a big jerk to everyone, and everyone hated him.
Awesome.
Yeah, and anime wise, that's pretty much it. This was the first year I really burned out too, because this is the year that we had to re-release MD Geist, and so that was a 2 months out of my life I'll never get back. But at the same time, this was also around the time we were re-releasing Grave of the Fireflies, and that turned out spectacular.
That is that DVD the one that's still that was re-released yet again, right?
Yeah, ADV came out with it again, but it's more or less the same disc. They might have re-encoded it or something, but all the special features that we poured over. In particular, I was charged with recutting scans of the of all the storyboards to the movie and having it be an alternate angle, and that took me about 3 or 4 weeks. And I just, 3 or 4 weeks spent 8 hours a day watching children die. That's a little tough.
Yeah.
And, this is also also the year Magic Woman M came out. And that almost broke me. That made me almost quit because it was so misogynistic and so terrible. I came very close to quitting and walking out.
I don't remember that at all. I don't think I ever saw it.
It's basically 14-year-old girl raped by a 20-foot-tall ogre with about a 3-foot wooden penis, and it played it off like, that was my first time, and I'll never forget it.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like this is the 10th anniversary of ADV.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 92, 2002. Wow. They made it a long time before they had to dissolve.
Yeah, they were the little company that could for a long time. According to this, the world premiere of Armitage Dual Matrix happened on CinemaNow.com online. That has to have been a first.
Wow.
I remember being incredibly bored by Armitage, but
I like the OVA as the movie, which had Kiefer Sutherland and Elizabeth Berkley in it. Not so good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, the Tokyo Pop and all their infinite wisdom announced that they were going to bring out Marmalade Boy and Brigadoon.
Oh, yeah. Big hits, I'm sure. Some of those copies are still... I still occasionally find battered copies of Marmalade Boy at the local Fry's Electronics.
I just remember having a meeting the president of Tokyo Pop at the time, and his big thing was, because Marmalade Boy is a girls' show, they're going to subtitle it in pink.
Brilliant.
Someone talked him out of that, but it's still in Comic Sans.
That is true. Oh, God. That's very true. That pissed me off even then. Cowboy Bebop, the movie, hit theaters. I saw that in the theater, and it's still a good movie. I hope they release that on Blu-ray. I'd like to see it again.
Yeah.
I remember enjoying that film.
Oh, yeah. This was also the year that Anime Expo decided that they were too big for just being in Los Angeles. They were going to go international.
Oh, didn't they? When was that Japan Anime Expo? Was that 2002?
I think it was either 2002 or 2003. 2002 was the one where they did New York.
Yeah, that didn't work.
And to kind of not cannibalize each other, we Big Apple Anime Fest took care of the film festival while they took care of the convention part because that was the expensive part.
Mm-hmm.
And they took out the Marriott Marquis. And I believe that year they almost it did okay. There were a lot of weird, complicated problems that year, and we had the theatrical screening across the street under the Virgin Megastore in Times Square. There was a little Lowe's threeplex, and that no one ever went to because people forgot to look for a movie theater under a giant Virgin Megastore.
Yeah.
So we were able to rent out that theater pretty easily. And, yeah, I kind of melted down that year, so I kind of don't have a clear memory of it.
Yeah, 2002 was not a good year for me. But it looks like that was the year that we officially announced Jadress as our mascot.
Well, Jadress had been on the site since the beginning, though.
Were we still using Sharon Apple in the logo at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Professional.
We didn't know what we were doing.
No, of course not. And you know what? And this has to be said. Like, as much as we bust on ourselves, and we went from being amateurs to professionals over the last 10 years, I would say.
Oh, God. And looking back at some of the old stuff I wrote back in that era, and I just like, oh my god.
Oh yeah, no, it's all head and hands for me. Like but at the same time, like I was young, you know, I was a kid, so.
Yeah, here's one article that I wrote chastising people for being already burying the Fox Kids dub of Escaflowne because they were probably not going to make barely any cuts to it.
A wise prediction.
Sigh.
This was the year that there was a lawsuit over the Spirited Away DVD because it had that red tint.
Oh, yeah, that was in Japan.
That was in Japan, but right, okay.
Right, and Ghibli basically went, that was intentional.
So as of 2002, the major players were Geneon, ADV, Bandai.
Geneon was still Pioneer at that point,
Pioneer,
I think.
And Funimation had not really burst onto the scene quite yet.
No, they had started releasing Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, but that was more or less it. But no one was really paying attention to them, and nobody even knew if they could do subtitles right at this point.
It took a while for them to come around.
This was the year that New Type USA got announced.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was a big deal.
I remember this Anime Expo. I came back to my hotel room with like four new magazines that were launching. New Type USA, Raijin Comics, and their weird little companion magazine that wasn't comics, and Anime Play. I think there was one more, and I remember looking through all of them, and almost all of them involved gnarled, badly translated from Japanese articles that just were read like a press release written by a guy who barely knew English.
Well, Anime Play was a DVD, right?
Yeah, but it was also a mess.
Yes, it was. I remember that.
And I just remember thinking, none of these magazines should survive.
I think 2002 was actually the first year that I was able to not have a crappy like retail job. I was able to live off freelance because I was writing for most of those. I was able to pay my bills doing freelance writing, thanks to those magazines all being, there being so many magazines in publication. You know, there's a lot of places to get work. So that was the first year for me that I was able to make a living doing this stuff.
This was also the year that Viz started taking online streaming seriously. This was the year that they worked with Cartoon Network to launch Adult Swim Reactor.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Very ahead of the curve there. Nobody wanted it, but there it was. A little too ahead of its time, I think. Oh, yeah. Because I forgot the biggest thing about Big Apple Anime Fest this year is this is where we had the premiere for the Cowboy Bebop movie. And so this was the year I got to share the stage with Yoko Kanno and Kawamoto and Watanabe. And I was just a pig in shit. And I'm pretty sure I made a complete fool of myself, fanboying out in front of them. But hey, who can blame me?
Yeah, I was about to say, don't kick yourself too much.
Yeah, I don't really blame myself at all for that because, holy shit, I was meeting Yoko Kanno.
Okay, so releases for 2002, the big ones. This was the year Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust came out on DVD.
Right.
So that was probably the big thing. Love Hina came out after everyone had seen it and downloaded all the digisubs.
Oh, this was the year that Animego finally managed to release Kimigori Orange Road on DVD.
Yeah. I remember that in their typical, like, prohibitively expensive giant box set that you had to pay up front for.
Right, and they really screwed it up initially because to save disk space, they would only have the opening on it once, and everyone got really pissed off. This was also around the time that CPM started pumping out Pat Labor and no one bought it. Oh, Manga Video, already entering into a death spiral, was releasing those two shitty Korean anime they licensed, Red Hawk and Armageddon.
I remember those. Those sat around for a while. Oh, this
because no one bought them.
Yeah, exactly. This is the year Jinro came out.
Jinro, Escaflowne movie, which was very pretty, but terrible.
I love the Escaflowne movie, so go to hell.
I'm going to be buying the Blu-ray.
I liked it a lot.
Oh, I have to come clean about something.
What's up?
This is the year that CPM released our restored version of Project Aiko. Project Aiko, was famous at the time because it had All the video releases were letterboxed, but the show was shot full screen, 4x3. So all of the releases up to that point had the top and bottom cut off. And so we kept going back to Japan and saying, hey, you got that full screen master, because you did release this one Laserdisc at one point that did have a full screen. And they're like, no, we can't find anything. Like, well, do you have the film? We could maybe chip in together, do a new transfer. They're like, no, we don't have the film. Okay. What we ended up doing is trying to find some guy online, and I ended up being in charge of this, that had that old import Laserdisc. And so what we ended up doing was that Project ACO DVD is mastered off that Laserdisc. And then we lied about it. We're like, nobody can possibly know. Return this disc to him. Tell him we couldn't use it. Tell him we found another master. So yeah, that was probably the jankiest thing we ever did at CPM. Because frankly, if we had, if you look at the end of the movie, the third side of that guy's Laserdisc had laser rot, so you can see the specs.
Wow.
So yeah,
for that to be the jankiest thing CPM ever did, that's saying something.
Okay. Well, I don't know. That was the most outright dishonest thing that we ever did.
So the Best Picture winner 2002, Chicago. I cannot believe that shit won Best Picture.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it once. I never need to see it again.
Oh, I liked it, but it wasn't Best Picture. I mean, I liked Gangs in New York way more than Chicago. Not only that, The Pianist came out that year.
Oh, there's
which is a much better movie. You know, Roman Polanski notwithstanding.
Right.
Okay, so 03.
Artistically, or not artistically, business-wise, this was the year that Shogakukan really got serious about the U.S. market because it was exploding, and they launched ShoPro USA.
Right, right. What became of that?
They merged with Viz, and so now Viz is the master licensor for all Shogakukan titles in the States. Let's see. Oh, this was the year that Hitler's Legacy manga came out, and everyone got really pissed.
Oh, yeah. And on April 7th, 2003, ADV announced Aura Battler Dunbean.
Which would proceed to sit on shelves unloved for the following 10
yes,
years.
Yes, indeed. Carl Maycheck worked on that. Sync Point was still in business.
Right.
They were still releasing Furikuri, and I think they were still pretending to release I Want to Be an Angel.
God, nobody bought that.
I liked that show, the first, like, four episodes of it, but it fell off after that.
It was too cutesy for me. Yeah. This was the year Manga or Media Blasters got busted because they must have taken some shortcuts or, like, someone wasn't paying attention in their workflow or something, and a ton of their DVDs were released in mono.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. This was also the year anime was still cool and was in Kill Bill Volume 1. That came out this year.
Right. This is also the year that Millennium Actress came out in theaters, and they just tried to brush it under the rug.
they basically just dumped it, right?
Yeah, they dumped it. It was all a ploy to increase the number of theatrically released anime, so they could have the Academy could say, okay, well, there was enough cartoons this year to have more nominees for Best Animated Film. And that's what happened there. Oh, this was the year that Raijin Comics suspended publication. That didn't last
long. Yeah, that really didn't last long. And I feel for them because they did put out a quality product.
They didn't. That thing was so badly written. It was like nobody was a native English speaker on that entire team.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm mostly referring to the big full-color Fist of the North Star editions that they put out. Those were not badly done. The magazine, yeah, it wasn't very good, but their graphic novels were generally not bad. At least I remember them being not bad. I could be misremembering.
I just remember the translation was really kludgy, and they wouldn't be consistent with the right to left as far as, like, the balloon placement.
Yeah. Well,
so it was all their stuff was really hard to read.
You know, it was clearly a very fly-by-night organization.
Oh, this year I just saw a note that it took us 3 weeks to finish covering AX. Here's something posted on July 21st. AX coverage finally complete.
Man, we wouldn't get away with that these days.
No. ADV licenses Wanda Bus Style.
Oh, God. Man. That thing was painful.
Yeah, I couldn't get through a single episode of that.
Densu bought Pioneer, or they bought their anime division anyway.
Oh, right. I heard... Oh, never mind about that.
So they eventually became Genion as a result of that.
Yeah, and for a long time, from the consumer perspective, it didn't look like anything changed. They were still pumping out some good stuff for a long time.
Yeah, I remember people being all pissy and weird about, well, my DVD spine, one says Pioneer, and the next one says Genion, and they got all pissy about that. I want uniform spines, Pioneer.
Oh, I almost forgot. This is the year that was the biggest disaster for Big Apple Anime Fest. This was the last Big Apple Anime Fest because we were entirely at the Marriott Marquis with theatrical screenings across the street under Virgin Megastore again. And this was the year that we had the world premiere of Tokyo Godfathers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they literally had finished it 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks before. And Sony actually hired a guy to bring over the fly over the film cans, like literally take out two seats, and his whole job the whole week was to babysit the film cans. And so we had it all threaded up. Satoshi Kon came himself to introduce it and have a Q&A with me afterwards. And okay, there are these little metallic strips at the end of every reel. Every film comes on about 6 or 7 reels. And at the end of every one, there's a little metallic strip. We don't use these in the States anymore because we splice everything onto one big platter. But they still use those in Japan. And what that little metallic strip does is it says, okay, change to the other projector now. Mm-hmm. Well, in America, they mean show's over, shut the projector off. So every 20 minutes, we would be watching the movie and the projector would shut off and the lights would come up. But the film would keep going. So every 20 minutes, I would, like, scramble and run back, and Lowe's was hiring non-union projectionists at the time, and this guy didn't know what he was doing. And Sony was freaking out. They're like, rewind it. And I'm like, I can't. It's a platter. And
what a nightmare.
Oh, Kon was just – he was miserable. This was his baby, and this was the first time anyone had seen it, and the projector kept turning off, and I it was just a disaster.
Still my least favorite Satoshi Kon movie.
And still good. I still like it.
I just said it least favorite. It's a good movie. It's my least favorite. Oh, AN Entertainment was functioning at this point. Anime Nation's brief foray into the world of licensing. They announced Jungle Goo. What was the name of that?
Harigu.
Yeah, I never got into that.
I thought it was cute. I might have snagged it had, you know, Funimation ever re-released it in something affordable, but they never did, I don't think. This was also the year ADV got into their music, which eventually culminated with Anime Explode.
Holy shit. which song? There was only one song that actually had anything to do with the show that they claimed it was.
And it didn't really have anything to do with the show. It had the show name in it.
The chorus said Gun Parade March. That was just like they had access to some library of some shitty album publisher.
That was Elastic Media, and they were one of the worst dub studios to ever touch anime, and they were partially owned by, or at least invested in, or had some connection with Mitsubishi. And Mitsubishi was in the anime business at that time, and so they insist on dubbing Gun Parade March, and so that's the dub Media Blasters got, and everyone was really miserable.
The most notable thing about Anime Explode was that the song that they had labeled as being about the show Demon Lord Dante was a song that was supposed to be about 9/11.
Oh, that's so horrible.
It's just a bad idea. But I remember at Anime Expo that year, they were pushing that really hard. Like, they had a big table and a bunch of big speakers, and they hired, like, breakdancers.
Oh, this was the year that Viz finally stopped releasing those stupid comic book versions of manga.
Oh, yeah. Those things were worthless.
Yeah, and everyone finally switched to the flopped... the unflopped cheap manga that we know today. And Tokyo Pop was really the first out of the gate with it. And when they did it, we were just kind of like, oh, there's no way they could possibly keep up with that volume. But they did, and the market was never the same after that. Yeah.
Okay, 2003. What came out on DVD?
Image had their brief run with trying to license stuff on their own. They released Hyper Police.
Ugh. Furries.
And it's a terrible show.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Fine with the furries.
It was pretty bad.
Funimation really started coming out strong by this point. They had done Blue Gender, and they were starting with Yu Yu Hakusho. Viz was still trying to do the single volume format with Ranma. CPM was already showing signs of decline at this point. Our big release of the year was DNA Squared.
There was a long story about that, because there was always this rumor that the masters got destroyed or something, or you couldn't get the materials for it.
Well, what had actually happened was, for the longest time, it was controlled by Shueisha, and Shueisha just wouldn't talk to any American licensor for years, and something happened politically, and finally they were able to get it.
Ooh, Bounty Dog.
The green anime. The puke green anime.
That was really bad.
This was when manga tried to bring out Fist of the North Star and utterly fell on their face.
Yeah, it was a huge failure. Huge failure. They only got through... They didn't even... I think they got, 10 volumes out, didn't they?
9 or 10, yeah.
9 or 10. This year, I think the big blockbuster show was Noir, which I got through about 5 episodes, and those 5 episodes are very interesting. I don't know, it fell off my radar, or I just got bored with it, or got sick of hearing the same 2 songs over and over again.
Yeah, this is my last full year at CPM, and I remember spending most of it just being utterly depressed by the state of things and where I saw things were going.
Already in 2003?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could tell we were on the road to nowhere, because we weren't everybody else was blowing up. And, you know, this is when the anime bubble really started getting out of control.
Oh, okay. You mean just at CPM?
Yeah, because CPM was not keeping up. And John knew that there was no way he was going to be able to recoup what everyone was, you know, bidding on this stuff for. So he would just sit out. And we would go through these long stretches where we would be re-releasing, you know, Legend of the Dragon Kings, and meanwhile Genion had Haibanai Renmei, and I was just, it was depressing. What are we doing?
Yeah, Abe was at AX that year. I remember that. I got something signed by him.
Gene Shaft came out.
Ugh. You know, my anime club went apeshit for that show, and I never got why, but they were like, oh wow, such a unique idea. That was, everybody was a girl, or it was all women and there was only one dude or something like that, or there was no more reproduction. It was some shitty gender politics sci-fi thing that I just was not able to get into.
Someone, maybe ADV, made a play for Sakura Wars TV. No Sakura Wars ever did well here.
It never did, and that's because the games never came out. It was never a thing here. It just never was.
And the shows were always terrible.
And actually, going over it, this was a good year for ADV. They had hits like Rune Soldier. They had Argon Soma, Rise of Fawn came out this year. They had the Kenshin OVAs, those came out.
Manga had Kaidomaru, which was pretty, if incomprehensible.
Yeah, that was...
Meteor Blasters had Samurai Deeper Kyo, which wasn't very good, but people bought it.
People did buy it.
At CPM we had Alien 9. Boy, that show was good. I'm still proud of that.
That was a good show. I did enjoy that. Please, Teacher!
Oh.
Yes! Yeah, this was a total fan service year for Genie, because not only did they release Please, Teacher, Mahoromatic is on this list.
God, all the shit that Bandai was coming out with was terrible. Scryde.
Ugh. But people really liked Scryde. They did like that
they
show.
They did?
Yeah. I knew many fans of that show.
Genie came out with Nia Under 7, which... annoyed the piss out of me, but people seemed to like it.
I think that was a blind Abe love thing. After Lane, everybody was just ready to love whatever his next thing was. And admittedly, he didn't have another good show until Haibanai Renmei. But, yeah.
Oh, here's the big one. Junkers Come Here.
Call me Junkers. Love that DVD cover.
That is the single worst DVD cover I think anyone ever came out with in the entire DVD era.
I would be so happy if... some enterprising DVD producer with a hint of irony would just start pasting the little word bubble, Call Me Junkers, on everything. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, has got Snake Eyes saying, Call Me Junkers.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, this was the year that John shocked the hell out of me and told me that we would be at a panel, during a panel while we were both on stage, would said, announced that we were going to be releasing Night Shift Nurses, the second part, uncut. And, gosh, that was disgusting.
Love Hina again. The worst, one of the worst OVAs I think I've ever seen. That was just awful. I don't know, do you remember the plot of that?
I avoided it. I was burned out by this point. I wasn't watching much.
I mean, I was burned out, but I still had to watch stuff because I was reviewing and writing about. Like, I made my living writing about it, but I was burned out. Love Hina again, if I'm not mistaken, was the one where Keiichi's long-lost sister comes back, who wants to fuck him, of course, and right. spends the entire time molesting all the girls in the house. It was just like the laziest, like most poorly written, just like straight up, here you go, you otaku, jerk off to this kind of a thing. So lazy. Like, just, ugh, that was disgusting.
Oh, here's a couple big ones. His and Her Circumstances.
Right.
And which, still a great dub,
the box,
I think.
The box set came out that year.
Right, and also, this is around the time Media Blast started pumping out 12 Kingdoms, which is still a great show.
Still a great show, yeah. I really enjoyed that one. Also, Bandai put out Witch Hunter Robin, which I liked a lot. So I watched that all the way to the end. It was good stuff.
I wasn't a huge fan.
ADV released that god-awful Nadesco movie,
Ugh.
The Prince of Darkness. Such
they were
movie.
Still pumping out City Hunter TV.
Yeah.
And Dirty Pair, and no one wanted either of those.
Yeah, I don't think that did too well for him.
Oh, this is also the year Interstellar 5555 came out.
Which I still watch probably once or twice a year.
Really?
Love it. Love it. That, first of all, Discovery is one of the greatest albums of all time, and those music videos are fucking awesome. So... I
was never a Daft Punk fan.
Yeah, well, that's a great, great album, and I love those music videos. I pop that in once or twice a year. Love it. Interstellar, great stuff.
There's My Sexual Harassment.
Otherwise known as Boku no Sexual Harassment, for those of you with VHS sitting around. That's the one with the corn cob, right?
Right.
That's what it's known for. All right, okay, so 2003 Best Picture, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. I waited 32 hours in line to see that.
I didn't. I was not a Lord of the Rings guy.
I was
all.
Huge in Lord of the Rings, but I had a bunch of friends that were really into it, and we had a line party. There was a marathon of all the films before the last one, and I still have my little, you know, I was there, like, line pass from that. Yeah, I was really into that, and the theatrical cut of Return of the King did not deserve to win Best Picture because it's choppy as fuck. Like, that movie only functions in the extended version. But, yeah. Anyway, Lord of the Rings. Also, that year, Lost in Translation, which was talked about among many an anime fan.
Having taken I hated place that movie.
Yeah, you know what? I saw it again recently. I like it now. All right, having rewatched
really?
It. Yeah, it's not bad. But then again, like, I've slowly come around to Sofia Coppola. I also really like Marie Antoinette. So I think I just, like, enjoy her stuff now. I didn't appreciate it then, but I think I get it now.
My whole thing with Sofia Coppola is that they're very well-made, very personal stories of women who are horrible.
Yeah, I don't know. Scarlett Johansson in Lost in Translation wasn't horrible.
I thought she was really annoying, and I wanted nothing to do with that character.
She spends most of the movie staring into the middle distance. Maybe I'm just taking it easier on her because it's Scarlett Johansson.
Hey, who can blame you?
Right, yeah. Okay. 2004, Dead Leaves premiered at Anime Expo Tokyo.
Ooh.
A huge stuff. Did you like Dead Leaves? I didn't really care for it.
I thought it was an interesting experiment, but I didn't really think it was very good.
2004 for me was the year I started working at Anime Insider. I moved to New York that year.
Yeah, this is the year I started working for Imagination.
Yep.
It's a... Boy, there's a company that was destined for success right there.
Those were some glory days, though, because Anime Insider was still a quarterly publication, so we were only coming out with about 4 issues a year, and then we had gone to bi-monthly, and then later in the year, I believe we went to monthly later on that year, but we were doing, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Specials and stuff like that, but those were some good days at Wizard. I remember that fondly. That's my good buddy and former guest on the show, Rob Brickens, when I met him, and those are good times. Fun memories. This was the year, I believe, Howl's Moving Castle came out. Yeah, it was. Howl's came out 2004. The first hugely disappointing Miyazaki movie.
Yeah, totally.
That was the year, yeah. And Entertainment Animation was still going with Miami Guns.
We had the first signs of Ghost in the Shell Innocence at this point.
Yeah, that was slowly coming around. That came out in the fall of that year, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also the year that Suncoast decided, you know, we're not going to stock the hentai.
Really?
And they pulled all the hentai.
FYE still stocks hentai.
Well, yeah, but that's a different company now.
I know, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Here's the big achievement of 2004. Heat Guy J on MTV.
New Type USA announced that Gary Steinman was going to come on, a good friend of mine. And
Great guy.
They couldn't have gotten a better guy to run that magazine. And New Type was, you know, I mean, in its early days had a lot of issues, but no pun intended. It had some problems, but it eventually became a pretty decent magazine.
Oh, this is the year. This is also a banner year for anime because this is the year that the anime episode of South Park came out.
Oh, yeah. That was a big deal.
Yeah, that was huge. You know, I still sing Let's Fight in Love every once in a while.
Actually, this is a big thing. They thought it was going to be a big thing, but it wasn't. This was the year ADV tried to do the simultaneous release with Girl Power.
Right, and Girl Power was just such a trifle of an OVA.
Yeah, it was like 40 minutes or something, but they got it. They picked it up because it was Akitaro Daichi, right?
Right.
And they thought, oh, Azumanga Daioh was big, so this will be big. And it wasn't, because no one gave a shit. And it was called Girl Power, and the cover was like a bunch of little girls on like a jet ski.
Well, the whole thing was super deformed. The whole thing.
Yeah. Pacific Media Expo happened this year.
Oh, this was the year that... Pacific Media Expo. They're still doing that.
They are still doing it. It's in a hotel in Los Angeles. In 2005, I will have a story about that. But
this is the year, and I got IATV to send me, and it was a total waste of money. I went alone and took out the entire Anaheim Convention Center.
Yep. And it was
thinking that it would be another AX.
And it was fucking empty. That was the ego of Mike Tatsugawa, who left AX in a storm of controversy to found Pacific Media Expo.
Yeah, I always remember because that was the year they flew over both Nami Tamaki and TM Revolution to have a concert.
Yep.
And it was so empty that they were like scrambling. They had like people on the show floors like begging people to go to the concert area. Yeah, that was brutal. Great concert though. speaking of concerts, wasn't this also the year that Larkin Seal played Otakon?
Yes, it was, and I interviewed them and mostly talked to their manager, but I was at that concert. It was in that big stadium in downtown Baltimore. The line was huge.
That was amazing. It snaked around like 8 city blocks.
It did, and it was a great concert. Lots of pyrotechnics.
I will never, ever forget the attempted ridiculous English interplay with the audience. Do you remember that?
Yep. He came out, Hyde comes out and goes, "Do you like crab?"
No, do you eat crab?
Do you eat crab?
It's like, and the audience, hello, Baltimore.
Yeah, and he comes out and he shouts, "Crab!" And everyone's
you eat
just
crab.
And everybody's standing there. It didn't go anywhere. And then he shouted like Evangelion, and everyone goes yeah, because that's like the first thing that came into his head or whatever. But that was a good concert. I remember that. Those are good times.
Yeah. This is around the time of year that, or around the time that Mari Ijima popped up in the U.S. convention scene because she lives in the States now.
Yeah.
And, tried to make a name for herself, grudgingly giving in to the fact that everyone does still remember her as Lin-Min-May.
Mm-hmm.
She never seemed too happy about that.
Sci-Fi Channel optioned Witch Hunter Robin for a live-action TV show that never materialized. And with good cause, because it was kind of a boring anime. I mean, I loved it, but it was pretty boring, and it would have been even more boring as live action.
Oh, this was also the year Makoto Shinkai really popped up.
Yep, 5 centimeters. Or not 5 centimeters.
This would have been...
Voices of a Distant Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I know he has his fans. I've never really been a fan.
This also was the year that Anime Crash... decided, which had long been a kind of janky Boston and New York-based retailer that kind of was, you know, a little shady. Always a little shady.
Yeah, they were very much like hucksters.
Yeah, they came out with Geisters.
Fractions of the Earth. Yes, I remember
now,
that.
Now, Geisters, this is a great story. Geisters was a U.S. and Korean co-pro, and it was being shot by Korean Studio. And, or not U.S., Japan-Korean co-pro. And it was originally CPM got it. And there was something to do with the contract, and basically that ended really badly. And, you know, John pulled out because it was these guys were kind of shysters. So it ended up going to Anime Crash. They were the only ones that would waste their time with such a crappy show. Mm-hmm. And they released it, tried to dub it themselves, turned out terrible. They tried to tie it in with all these completely unrelated properties. Like they had this kind of power glove type toy for PlayStation that they were pushing. And ultimately it ended in tears because the Korean company went out of business before they could get the masters to the second half of the show. So they only ended up even releasing the first three discs.
Yeah, they were pretty fly by night. I mean, they also tried to release. They tried to do some co-production on a new Speed Racer, and that just that just didn't work out. Notable this year was Steam Boy.
Yeah.
Sigh. Steam Boy.
That's so good.
Which I remember sitting around a TV watching. You were there. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure for that. We saw it really early, like a VHS copy of it, really early. I don't even think it was completely finished at that. But
I first saw it on 35, and early industry screening, and I was so underwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned it many times. I wound up seeing that like 3 or 4 times for the magazine. It was no fun.
4 Kids announced Tokyo Mew Mew and One Piece.
Oh.
Oh, that would end well.
That would end well. This was the year Funimation really started coming out strong. They licensed Burst Angel. They licensed the third Tenchi Muyo OVA. So they were really
started,
which was shit, but they licensed it.
Yeah, they were sold.
They really started coming into their own this year, and now they completely dominate the industry. So we see how things have gone. It was only about 5 years for them to completely take over. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things fell into place in just the right way, but yeah.
All right, these were boom times. Well, make no mistake, this was the bubble at its peak.
Absolutely, yes.
This is when Cowboy Bebop started getting remastered. This is when Imagination we started licensing stuff. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, CPM still continued to spiral the drain at this point. Yeah, you want to go into the series now or into the releases?
Yeah, let's just skip that. I was going to say Bandai tried a theatrical release for Gundam F91.
Oh, God. Oh, we did that. Actually, all of those theatrical releases, I remember not too long after Funimation tried to release, like, the first 4 episodes of whatever new Gonzo show theatrically as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep.
All of those tanked. Yeah. We got, like, 20 people, if that, at the Imagination Theater, and we were the only place in New York City screening it. We're the only place, sometimes, the whole east half of the country screening it.
Let's see here. So let's go ahead and get into releases. Happy Lesson.
Oh, God.
Most remembered for Mike Tool's review, where he took it out into his backyard and literally buried it.
Happy Lesion, I think he called it.
Yes, he did. Kitty Grade, which I never got into, but it was popular and sold really well, to my knowledge.
This is when Gun Parade March came out.
That's not a notable release. Come on, that show had no fans. I don't know anyone who liked that or was into it. Actually, it wasn't even a matter of no one liking it. Nobody saw it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anyone that even sat through it or even saw like 1 episode of it. Like, it was super obscure.
CPM finally wrapped up the Descendants of Darkness collection, or as we referred to it in the office, Gay Undead Detectives. Mm-hmm. Oh, Memories finally came out on DVD at long last.
Yeah. I had a VHS copy of a Laserdisc transfer for the longest time until that came out.
I actually bought that ridiculous 3 Laserdisc box set.
Yep. That was the fuzzy one, right?
Yeah. I still have it. It's right here.
It was Flocked, or whatever they call it. A bunch of Slayers movies, which by this time I was so over Slayers.
Oh, this was the year ADV started doing the essential anime reissues. which would later become their entire business model.
Indeed. They also released Azumanga Daioh, which was a big deal back in the
right.
day. Back in the day. Viz put out Saikano, which I loved at the time. I haven't seen it since then, but Bamboo is a big fan of that show. It's her forms, Use Your Icon, to this day.
I thought it was a little overwrought, but,
yeah, but
it's still a decent show.
It was super melodrama. I mean, it was just like, things certainly can't get worse than this. Well, yes, they can. Like, no matter what happened, things would always get worse. So it's not a good year for Genion. Demon Lord Dante.
Higai Jay.
Yep.
Volume 6.
Yeah. When really no one was paying attention.
CPM, we were really scraping bottom. We had Domain of Murder.
What was that?
That was a little one-off seinen detective show that no one that we clearly got as part of a package deal with something else that, yeah, we never even bothered dubbing it before. But notably, it was the only time that we hired NYAV Post to do anything. And our boss, Stephanie Shlovsky, did not get along with Sinner Necklace. And I think it ended badly. I'm not even sure we ever even paid Mike.
Bandai put out Wolf's Rain, which is a show I still love. I really like the end of that show. The whole thing is really good, but I still really like that. I don't have it anymore. I should rebuy it.
Great music,
and I liked all the characters, and good show. They should re-release that.
This is also around the time ADV started releasing a bunch of old shit that I wanted, but no one else did.
Yeah.
Like the Megazone trilogy and Birth. Birth, I still see in the $5 racks at conventions. It's like no one wants that show.
Yeah.
Bandai released Kaze no Yojimbo. Do you remember that?
The show with barely any animation, yeah.
Yeah, just lots of really bad After Effects. And I actually really enjoyed the show, despite its obvious shortcomings, but no one bought it.
Actually, yeah, this is definitely the bubble at its peak, because this is when a lot of crap started coming out.
Yeah,
and a lot of
stuff that had no business being released here.
No business being released here, and a whole lot of stuff that was just, like, in the middle of a mediocre release. But Genion did have a good show, Paranoia Agent. Fucking fantastic.
Funimation was still releasing Yu Yu Hakusho in singles. Here's volume 26. Viz
okay.
with Inuyasha, volume 22. God, I can't believe they were still selling.
They were still, yeah, that show went, I mean, jeez. I had a friend who was still buying them every year.
Here's Animego still trucking along with Urusei Yatsura. They're here at volume 30.
They eventually did get the whole thing out.
They did, to their credit.
Okay, so Best Picture, 2004, Million Dollar Baby. Not a fan.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan either of that. But, yeah, I don't know. For some reason, that movie just didn't hit it with me.
I mean, I didn't like Mystic River at all. And then I saw Million Dollar Baby and didn't like that. And then I decided, well, I guess I don't really like Clint Eastwood movies. Or at least movies that he directed. So, yeah, not a great movie. That year, my pick was The Aviator, which was a much better film than Million Dollar Baby. Okay, so that wraps up the exhausted first part of this whole experiment.
Oh my god.
Yeah, we will be back next week with 2005 through 2009. Hopefully our constitutions will hold out, and hopefully somebody is getting something of value out of this. But we will see you next week.
I like your voice crack there.
I did that on purpose.